There is a fifth dimension, beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition. It lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Dimensions, a Twilight Zone podcast. On tonight's episode, we will be discussing Season 2, Episode 12, titled Dust. This episode was written by Rod Serling, directed by Douglas Hayes, produced by Buck Houghton, music by Marius Constant and Jerry Goldsmith. In the cast were Thomas Gomez, John Larch, Vladimir Sokolov, and John A. Alonzo. Its original air date was January 6th of 1961, and you can watch it on Tubi TV, Freevee TV, Paramount Plus, or if you have the DVDs or Blu-rays. And again, as I always say, and I'll always say, I highly recommend the Blu-rays if you have the ability to get them. Ask for them for Christmas if you need to. If you have a little bit of extra of disposable income, go to Amazon and make a purchase. If you're a fan of the show, it is definitely well worth it. As always, there are spoilers ahead, so if you haven't seen this episode or haven't seen this episode since TV was still black and white, stop this podcast, go watch it at any of the aforementioned places, and come back and listen to the rest of the episode. And then if you have strong feelings about it, go ahead and email me at dimensionstzpodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. And I will say that this episode will be a little different than the other episodes that we've done, in that we're going to get a bit of a history lesson with this episode, because we're going to learn about a lot of things, most notably about why Rod Serling started the Twilight Zone to begin with and what it has to do with this episode. So with that, I will get into the opening narration, and then we'll have a history lesson, and then we'll discuss the episode, and then we'll go from there. With that, let's get to the opening narration. There was a village built of crumbling clay and rotting wood, and it squatted ugly under a broiling sun like a sick and mangy animal waiting to die. This village had a virus shared by its people. It was the germ of squalor, of hopelessness, of a loss of faith. For the faithless, the hopeless, the misery-laden, there is time, ample time, to engage in one of the other pursuits of men. They begin to destroy themselves. So I will say to start that I do like the opening narration in the beginning of this episode, because it's one of the better ones where Rod is actually in the picture, so to speak. In the beginning, they're testing the noose and the rope and the hanging mechanism, and when they drop the bag of sand down, there you see Rod coming out and starting his opening narration, and it's to me one of the better openings of the Twilight Zone episodes. But let's get into the meat and potatoes of how this episode and the Twilight Zone in general came to be. Now, this episode, or I should say the Twilight Zone, let's start with that, and this episode also, came about from the lynching of Emmett Till in 1915. 55. Now, I know what you're going to say. Bill, who is Emmett Till? Well, if you're listening to this program, chances are you know who that is because you're old enough to know history. If you happen to be a person on the younger side of, you know, the world listening to my voice, here's a little history lesson. Emmett Till was a black teenager who was 14 years old in 1955. In the summer of his 14th year on this planet, his mom asked him what did he want to do for the summer, and Emmett said, I want to go to Mississippi and visit my cousins. And his mom was like, are you sure about that? And he was like, yeah, I kind of want to go see my cousins in Mississippi. And she said, okay. And she bought him a train ticket or a bus ticket. I can't remember now, which escapes me. But he went to Mississippi in 1955 to visit his cousins. Now, interesting enough, my father was about the same age as Emmett Till was in 1955. And my father also used to take train trips from Chicago, where I was, my hometown, to see his family in rural Middle Tennessee. And he explained to me when I was younger that when he would take the train, when they would hit the Mason-Dixon line, all of the black people on the train would get up and go to the back of the train. And then when he got to his destination in Tennessee, the little town that his family lived in, they would go to town to go shopping or maybe get something to eat at the diner, what have you. And my father recalled that when he was literally a teenager, he said he would be walking down the sidewalk with his family that he went to visit. And if there had happened to have been a black person walking toward them on the sidewalk, when he would see the white people, the black person or black people would walk out into the street, stand there, and wait for the white people to pass on the sidewalk before getting back on the sidewalk and continuing on their way. And so, bear in mind with that, that actually happened. That was a thing. You've got to remember the climate of 1955. This was before Martin Luther King had a dream. This was before Medgar Evers or Martin Luther King got shot. This was when we still had black and white bathrooms and black and white water fountains and black people not being allowed to eat at the lunch counter at Woolworth's and Rosa Parks still having to sit at the back of the bus before she decided to say, nah, not doing that. This was before Rosa Parks had had enough. So Emmett Till goes to Mississippi, and I'm sure if he took a train, he had to ride in the back at some point. Now, he gets to Mississippi, and he's with his family, they're with his cousins, they're having fun, they go to town, and while they're in town and at a shop, Emmett Till, and sources kind of vary on this, some say he didn't do anything other than whistle at her, and some say he actually grabbed her by the wrist and told her that he'd been with several white women and he likes white women and that sort of thing. But one way or another, he supposedly harassed this woman, either by catcalling or by actual somewhat physical touch, even though, of course, his family remains even to this day that he never touched her. His few cousins that are still alive remain stoic to this day that he never laid a hand on her. He whistled at her, and that's what he did. This resulted in the following evening, her husband and a couple of his friends going to where Emmett was staying and pulling him out of the house, where he was never seen alive again. They beat him to within an inch of his life, shot him in the head, and dumped his body in the river. A few days later, his body was discovered. They informed his mother. His mother had his body sent back to Chicago so she could give him a proper burial. And she, in the words of Dave Chappelle, did the most gangster shit possible, pardon my language, by having an open casket for her son, who was barely recognizable, basically not recognizable, with how bad they had beat him. Because she said she wanted the world to see what they had done to her baby. Now, the two men that were charged with the crime, that of course were witnessed upon by Emmett Till's family when he was extricated from the house by these two men, these two men stood trial and were found not guilty by a jury of their peers in rural Mississippi in 1955. Go figure. So they were found not guilty in 1955. Now, the addendum to that part of the story was that in 1956, they were interviewed by Look magazine, which was a popular magazine of the time. Look magazine interviewed them to where, and in the interview, because of double jeopardy laws, they literally admitted to killing Emmett Till. And there's nothing anyone could have done about it due to the double jeopardy laws that exist. And they knew it. And so they admitted to it. And no one did anything about it because they couldn't do anything about it. Now, I know what you're saying. Bill, what does Emmett Till have to do with Rod Serling in the Twilight Zone? And I'll tell you what it has to do with it. Rod Serling, in 1958... wrote a teleplay for the television series Playhouse 90. Now, I know you've heard of Playhouse 90 because I've said it about 4,700 times in the span of this podcast while working on the episodes, because 99% of the people that have appeared in the Twilight Zone have been on an episode of Playhouse 90. It's one of those ones that I always say everyone's been on, kind of like Gunsmoke and Rawhide and Dr. Kildare and all those other things. So in 1958, Rod Serling pens a teleplay for Playhouse 90 based on the Emmett Till lynching, called, titled A Town Has Turned to Dust. Now, In this teleplay he wrote, it was set in contemporary times, i.e. the late 50s, and it was set in the South, destination unknown, just a town name, not a necessary state or specific part of the South. But it dealt with the lynching of a black man because he had an affair with a white woman who was married to a store owner, who the store owner and a number of his friends went to the jail. The sheriff saw him coming. The sheriff stepped aside and they lynched the black man. And this was all narrated and covered by a news reporter for a newspaper that came down to cover the story about, you know, the trial and the, you know, the lynching and the arrest and all that stuff. Well, when the sponsors and the censors for Playhouse 90 read the script, they were like, yeah, no, we're not going to do that. You know, that's a little too hot. Not going to touch it. Don't want to make anyone that lives in the South mad because they might not buy the sponsor's product. And how would we make them mad? Well, we'd make them mad by showing a story about blatant racism and the lynching of a black man in the rural South in contemporary times. So the script had to be amended and amended and amended and changed. And as Rod put it, he said they went to work on it like a group of butchers going to work on a steer. And by the time it hit the airwaves, it was no longer a story about contemporary times, about a black man being lynched in the South for having an affair with a white woman whose husband owned a store. It was now set in the 1870s in the Southwest and dealt with a Mexican man being lynched by a white mob in the Old West. So, just to be clear, the censors and the sponsors were not okay with a story about a black man being lynched in the rural South, but were okay with a Mexican man being lynched in the Southwest. I'll let that sink in for a second. Okay, so this made Rod apocalyptically angry that they had taken the story that he had put his heart and soul into and was really wanting to put it out there for the society to digest and for it to bring it to light that stuff like this still happens. And it was completely dismantled and reassembled like a Frankenstein, to where it was unrecognizable, much like Emmett Till. So this caused Rod, this was the impetus to cause Rod to create the Twilight Zone, because he said he could take the stories about today's society and the evils of what's going on and the things that he wants to talk about, and he could take them and put them in a story and couch them or house them in stories about witches and warlocks and ghouls and goblins and still get the point across to the more discerning viewers of what he's actually trying to say. And so the Emmett Till murder and the Playhouse 90 film A Town Is Turned to Dust was the impetus for the Twilight Zone, as we see. Now, the Playhouse 90 episode, A Town Is Turned to Dust, had, Playhouse 90, a lot of the Twilight Zone players played on it, and such is the same with A Town Is Turned to Dust. The store owner was played by the perennial favorite of Twilight Zone fans, Mr. William Shatner. The newspaper man was played by James Gregory, who we have seen before and will see again in the Twilight Zone. He will be in the episode The Passersby, and he was in season 1, episode 1 as the army colonel who talked to the main character after he got out of the isolation pod that he was in. And the sheriff in A Town Is Turned to Dust is played by Rod Steiger, who would go on to become internationally acclaimed and well-known for playing another law enforcement role, that being Police Chief Bill Gillespie in the 1967 film In the Heat of the Night, starring Sidney Poitier, who and Rod Steiger would actually go on to earn an Academy Award for his role in that film as the police chief of a rural Mississippi town. Go figure. If you have the ability to find a print of A Town Has Turned to Dust, it's quite something to see. Although it varies wildly from its actual source material, with it being that it's no longer mirroring the Emmett Till case, now it's about a lynching of a Mexican man in 1870 Southwest. But nonetheless, it's a great piece of film, but sadly, you can't just go buy a DVD of it. It hasn't really ever been released. You can find snippets of it here and there on YouTube and stuff, and I think there are some, I hate to use the term bootleg, but there are some bootleg copies, I think, floating around somewhere on the internet, but I don't know where. And that's not my business anyway. But I'm sure if you looked hard enough, you could probably find it. And so, be that as it may. So this is sort of an homage. This episode is sort of an homage to that whole thing. And to me, it's one of those episodes that I never really... when I watched it as a younger man, as a child even, it wasn't one of my favorites. But now, the older I get, the more I like it. And I really do. The more I like it. So let's get into it. This episode is about a young Hispanic man, a young Mexican man, living in a border town in the Southwest, who gets drunk one night and is riding his horse and wagon through town at a high rate of speed. A little white girl runs out in the road. He runs her over and kills her. And he is then, of course, tried, convicted, and sentenced to be hanged. You know. Same old, same old. Well, the episode starts on the day of the hanging. So, we meet young Mr. Gallegos, who is the man going to be hanged. We meet the sheriff, played by John Larch, who we've seen before and we'll see again. And we get Mr. Sykes, who is kind of like a peddler, a dealer who sells the town the rope to hang Mr. Gallegos with, who is a very unscrupulous man, played by Thomas Gomez, who we saw previously in Season 1, Episode 6, Escape Clause, where he played the devil himself. So we get Mr. Sykes being his antagonistical self, and we also see the father of Mr. Luis Gallegos, the man about to be hanged, who is played by Vladimir Sokolov, and we see him trying to bargain with the sheriff and with the family of the little girl that got killed to spare his son's life, saying his son was drunk because he was depressed because he couldn't find work. All he wants to do is work and provide for his family, and there's no work, and so he was depressed, and so he drank, and then he foolishly went out riding his horse and wagon and accidentally killed a little girl. To which he feels just enormously sad and upset about, of course, as anyone would be. So we get to Mr. Sykes wanting to make a little extra money, so he tells the little girl that's, you kind of take it to be his daughter, to be old man Gallegos' daughter, the guy that's about to be hanged's little sister. You get Mr. Sykes tell Mr. Gallegos that he has this magic dust that will change everyone's mind into, you know, into loving, and that that could save his son, but he needs 100 pesos. I think it was 100 pesos to make it happen, to give him the dust. And so Mr. Gallegos and the little girl goes away, and Mr. Gallegos goes and takes all the money he has and borrows from friends and neighbors to get the required sum to get the magic dust. And then, of course, the time of the hanging comes, to where, of course, the entire town turns out to watch the show, because movies hadn't been invented yet, or podcasts, and so people had to go and do other things for entertainment, like watching a man get hanged in the town. And so we come to find that Mr. Gallegos gets there in time before they hang his son to give Mr. Sykes the money to get the magic dust to spread the love and to stop the hanging. And so you see Mr. Gallegos go in front of the crowd, and he's taking this sand from out this pouch that he paid Sykes for, and he's throwing it at the people and saying, "You must pay heed to the magic, you know, love one another," and this sort of thing. And it does no good, because the hangman pulls the lever and drops the rope anyway. But much to the crowd's shock and amazement, the brand new 5-strand hemp rope that Sykes sold the town to hang young Mr. Gallegos has snapped, and Mr. Gallegos is still very much alive, much to the amazement of the crowd and much to the delight of his father. The sheriff then intervenes, and he talks to the family of the little girl and says, you know, well, we can try again, but it has to be up to you. We can't say yes or no. And so the family somewhat reluctantly agrees to let Mr. Gallegos go, saying that there's been enough killing and enough bloodshed with the death of their little girl, so that they don't need to also likewise see Mr. Gallegos die to exact an eye for an eye. And with that, we get the end of the story and the closing narration. So now the closing narration. It was a very small, misery-laden village on the day of a hanging, and of little historical consequence. And if there's any moral to it at all, let's say that in any quest for magic, in any search for sorcery, witchery, legerdemain, first check the human heart, for inside this deep place is a wizardry that costs far more than a few pieces of gold. Tonight's case in point, in the Twilight Zone. So, in this episode, there was a happy ending, unlike the real-life case of Emmett Till. But we couldn't have one without the other. So, through Rod Serling's apocalyptic anger over being having his work completely butchered by sponsors and censors for the sole purpose of making money, he decided to create the Twilight Zone. instead. And I think we're better for it, honestly. So, with that, let's move into the bios. Now, this episode was directed by Douglas Hayes, who we've already discussed before, because he did several episodes in season one and several episodes in season two. Some of the biggest names in Twilight Zone, such as The Howling Man, Eye of the Beholder, and The After Hours. And this is his, his next to the last episode that he directs for the Twilight Zone. He has one more left in this season and in general in the Twilight Zone, and that is episode 15, The Invaders. So if you add up his work is, his directing work on the Twilight Zone is quite prolific, but if you want to listen to more about him, go all the way back to And When the Sky Was Opened in season 1, episode 11, and you can learn more about Douglas Hayes. Now, Thomas Gomez played Peter Sykes, and like I said, he was also in the season 1, episode 6, episode Escape Clause, so if you want to hear more about his bio, go there and listen to that episode and listen to his bio there. But this episode was his last appearance in the Twilight Zone. Sheriff Koch was played by John Larch, who we talked about in one of my favorite episodes, season 1, episode 9's Perchance to Dream, where he played the psychiatrist trying to help the man that was having the worst day of his life. He was in, of course, this episode, and he will be in season 3's wildly acclaimed and most well-known Twilight Zone episode, It's a Good Life, starring Bill Mumy. He actually plays his father in the episode, so stay tuned for that one as well. But if you want to learn more about Mr. Larch, go back and listen to that episode where we discuss about him, where he plays in Perchance to Dream. So, you know, we have a few repeat offenders, I should say, on the Twilight Zone. And so the next and, I would say, last bio that I'm going to do for this episode will be Mr. Vladimir Sokolov. Now, Vladimir Sokolov was born in 1889 and passed away at the age of 72 in 1962. So, this episode being in 1960, he wasn't long for this world after this episode came on, and as a matter of fact, he's in two more episodes of The Twilight Zone in Season 3, which is Season 3, Episode 6, The Mirror, with Peter Falk, and Season 3, Episode 32, The Gift, where he plays a blind man in a bar, or cantina, actually. Now, what's interesting about Mr. Sokolov is the fact that he is not, in fact, of Hispanic or Mexican descent. He is actually Russian, as you hadn't guessed by the name Vladimir. He was a familiar character actor of course, Russian heritage, who played in a lot of films and TV in the U.S., of course, coming from Moscow, where he attended the Academy of Dramatic Arts. He joined the world-renowned Moscow Art Theater, where he worked for the next decade as an actor and assistant director, eventually moving up to directing plays himself In 1923, he emigrated to Berlin and spent most of the next decade acting in films there and in Austria. And with the coming problems with the Nazis, he first relocated to Paris and then to the United States in 1937. And with his acting background, he quickly found himself busy with many roles in films, ranging from playing a Russian person to a Chinese person to Mexican to Italian and everything in between. He mostly played gentle and beatific characters, and on occasion would play a less than reputable person on screen. He is most notable for playing Anselmo in For Whom the Bell Tolls, to which he was also in, of all things, Playhouse 90 adaptation of For Whom the Bell Tolls, as well as playing a peasant in the town in The Magnificent Seven, and of course parts in numerous television shows like Maverick, The Donna Reed Show, Death Valley Days, Wagon Train, The Rifleman, The Untouchables, The Dick Powell Theater, Thriller, of course The Twilight Zone, and his last appearance on screen would be in the 1962 movie Taras Bulba, but his last episode, The Twilight Zone, was released just shortly before his death in 1962. So with that, let's move on to trivia for this episode. So, the hollow-backed horse in the foreground besides the jail had a condition of malformed vertebrae and weakness in the soft tissues that allowed the spine to sag like that, called lordosis. The little boy who talks to Luis Gallegos through the bars of the jail was played by Douglas Hayes Jr., who, of course, was the son of the director of this episode. John A. Alonso, who played Luis Gallegos, and Vladimir Sokolov, who played Old Man Gallegos, were both in The Magnificent Seven. Thomas Gomez, who played played Mr. Sykes, was actually a full-blooded white European. His ancestry was from Spain, France, and Ireland. And for anyone wanting a inflation calculation, 100 pesos is roughly worth about $6 in today's money. Obviously, it was worth more then than it is now, but an inflation calculation says it's worth about $6 today. So with that, let's move on to the goofs of the episode. After the crowd disperses, after the hanging doesn't happen, a wrinkle is visible in the desert backdrop, and some light and shadows can be seen crossing it as well. The number of turns the rope makes around the scaffold increases at the very end. When the sheriff is alone on the scaffolding, the trap door is open. After he comes down, it's closed, and no one is seen closing it, as he was the only one on the platform. And lastly, when the little boy first walks up to the jail window to talk to Luis Gallegos, his mouth is below the opening of the window. In the next shot, he is considerably taller. Most likely they had a box for him to stand on, so that you aren't just looking at the top of his head when he was talking to Luis Gallegos, who was in the jail. So let's move on to the likes and dislikes of this episode. Well, I like this episode. It doesn't really have a huge IMDb rating. It's actually on some of the somewhat lower scale of IMDb. It's not the worst, but it's nowhere near the best of Twilight Zone episodes as far as IMDb is concerned. And it's nowhere near the best as far as Bill myself is concerned. I do like this episode. I do like it a lot. Is it in my top 5? No. Is it in my top 10? No. Is it in my top 20? No. Is it in my top 50? Yes, definitely top 50. Maybe even top 25. I'm not sure. I'd have to really sit down and put a list together. And I suppose I may do that one day and just add it as an addendum to one of the episodes of the podcast. But for the time being, I do like this episode a lot. I like the, again, I'm a sucker for Old West episodes of the Twilight Zone, like this, and like Mr. Denton on Doomsday and that sort of thing. Now, what I do notice, and if you'll notice also, on the Twilight Zone, they seem to reuse some names from time to time, and mostly Serling does this. In the original A Town Is Turned to Dust, the sheriff in the Playhouse 90 adaptation of A Town Is Turned to Dust was Sheriff Denton, very similar to Mr. Denton on Doomsday. So there's that. In this episode, you have Peter Sykes, played by Thomas Gomez. And then, of course, come later on, we will discuss an episode titled The Grave, where Lee Marvin is a bounty hunter hunting for a man that gets gunned down in a town. The man that gets gunned down's name is Pinto Sykes, so same. And John Larch in this episode, of course, plays Sheriff Koch. In the Season 5 episode, I Am the Night, Color Me Black, we will see another story about a hanging, and oddly enough, the sheriff in that episode is named Sheriff Koch, so go figure. So a lot of similarity, a lot of crossover in names from stuff written by Serling, which, I mean, it happens. You know, you have a name you like, you stick with it. It is what it is. You know, I'm not going to quibble over, you know, the name of a sheriff in 1870s Southwest presiding over the hanging of a Mexican man, and a sheriff in contemporary times presiding over the hanging of another man in complete pitch black darkness. But we'll get to the episode when we get to the episode. I do like that one as well. But with that, why don't we move on to dislikes of this episode. I never told you my dislikes. My dislikes were that it kind of dragged a little in spots, or was a little dry in spots, I guess, but it's dust, so it's dry. But overall, I really liked it. Overall, I don't really have a whole lot to say bad about it. I think everyone did a great job acting, you know, and it was well done. One of the, you know, it was a good episode, in my opinion. If you have a differing opinion, I'd love to hear it. Please write me at dimensionstzpodcast@gmail.com and tell me your thoughts about this episode. I'd love to hear it. And with that, why don't we move on to casting for this episode. So if Hollywood were to call me and say, Bill, we're going to remake this episode, who would you cast in the roles of this episode? And I would say, well, Hollywood, this is what I would do. For Peter Sykes, I would cast Mr. Javier Bardem, because I think he could play that character quite well. For Sheriff Koch, I would cast Dennis Quaid, because he's a great actor. I haven't seen him in anything in a while. Not that I've been necessarily looking for him, but I think he plays the lawman well. You know, or at least I liked him in Wyatt Earp. I'll say that. You know. And Old Man Gallegos, Edward James Olmos, because I love that man. He's a great actor. And why not? Edward James Olmos for Old Man Gallegos. And for Luis Gallegos, the guy being hanged, everybody's current flavor of the day, Mr. Pedro Pascal. If you like it, let me know. If you don't like that idea, let me know. Dimensions, tzpodcast@gmail.com. So let's move on to the moral or philosophy of the story. And I think it hits us in the face. You know, certainly we talked about everything in this episode, from Emmett Till to, a Mexican man being hanged for killing a small girl in the Old West. And certainly I think the moral of the story is that hate must never be stronger than love. And certainly in this episode, love wins. Love conquers. That's not necessarily the real world, but it could be if we put our hearts and minds to it and made it a daily chore instead of a whimsical fancy. And I think that's the moral of the story here. And with that, let's get into what will be next week's episode. Next week, join us. We will be talking about how the professor from Gilligan's Island wants to stop Lincoln from being assassinated. So join us next week for Back There. Join us, won't you? And again, thank you, all 15 of you now, for listening to me. You really know how to make a guy feel special. So I appreciate every one of you. Tell a buddy, bring a friend. Let everyone know you listen to this thing. Like, comment, subscribe. Put it on the bulletin board at school. Whatever you got to do. Let people know about this thing. And thank you all for listening. And have a good day.